There is only one God, and his name is Death. And there is only one thing we say to Death. Not today.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand ourselves and relaunch at the same time the game did with a second edition. Each week we bring you a new dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Martin, and our patrons and fans. This wouldn't be possible without you. We have huge plans, and this year we get to enact those. We are going to be co-hosting Game of Thrones Nationals. Learn more at agotnationals.com. Also check out the community site at agot.cards, where you can find tons of community content and an event listing system. That's good. That's a good quote. I always like revisiting that one.
We're going to teach you all how not to die.
Me first.
Not today. We get.
So today we have a special guest. Guest, introduce yourself, if you may.
Please. My name is Elisa Bacco. I'm a resident of Iowa, and unfortunately I live in a dead zone where we do not have a meta. So I end up traveling far and wide in order to get games in. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, quite welcome.
Thank you for joining.
So this is another kind of special edition, little different, episode of the White Book here for episode 342, of course, with myself, Will, and Scott, who you already heard, and Elisa joining us. So this is going to be another kind of new player episode. But before we get too far into that particular line of thinking, I wanted to do a couple things, one of which is to run our Patreon giveaway for the week, which is going to be for entry to U.S. Nationals.
Woo woo!
Ooh. Yeah, so we're gonna go hit the old random.org. We're gonna go count. I love that the listeners have to wait for me to literally count down from the top of the page to find the right person who's number one. this time it is going to be I'm gonna butcher this name. Kiko? I'm gonna guess
Kiko. Oh, it's Kiko. I know Kiko.
Okay. I thought it was probably Kiko, but I'd never said it out loud.
Kiko lives in New Jersey and he is a good guy. And congrats, Kiko.
There we go. Well, hopefully that, sir, will be something you can put to use. Fingers crossed.
And is there a card design available at your tournament?
alas, I cannot convince FFG to let me have a card design at U.S. Nationals, you know, because then the Canadians will want one, and it'll be a whole thing, so, you know.
Then Gen Con will want one.
Exactly. You know, and then Melee at Worlds is going to want one, and it's just a snowball.
If you give a mouse a cookie.
Exactly. If you give a mouse a card design,
everyone will want one.
It'll be great. Well, okay, so that was item number one I wanted to make sure that we hit on. So item number two is, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and kind of where you are in Game of Thrones, kind of how you got into things before we get too far.
Yeah, sounds good. So Sam Whitehead is my husband, and he was on your guys' podcast a little while ago, maybe a month or so ago. I can't remember. But he was the one who introduced me to Game of Thrones, and I'd already been into Magic. So when he told me that there's another card game out there that was similar, but like had a smaller card pool and we didn't have to spend millions of dollars in order to get good, I was pretty excited. So the first evening that he introduced me to the card game, I just could not get enough. We kept playing and I was like, oh, just one more game. And it ended up being like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I was pretty into it. But unfortunately, because like I said before, we kind of live in a dead zone, we don't get many opportunities to play with other people aside from like ourselves. So we get out and we, for instance, like have gone down to Iowa City. So played with people like Jared Leupold and like Eric Hosse is down there, but he's kind of not playing so much anymore. But anyway, played mostly with like Knights of the Corn. I won the Battle of Trident somehow. that was like a year and a half ago though. Since then have not been doing as well. Probably because of the fact that we just don't have very many people to play against. But yeah, but I still really enjoy playing. I think my favorite house is Martell, probably because I've had the most experience playing them. Another house that I super enjoy, but I'm not good at all, is Tyrell. I think I really enjoy them because they have really pretty cards. So
nothing wrong with that.
You know, sometimes he can't be cerebral. yeah sometimes you know you don't have to be cerebral. Sometimes you can just be aesthetically pleasing. So I don't know if that's enough information. Yeah. But I feel like
I think that gives us a starting point, and you know, part of the conceit later in the episode is going to be kind of a Q&A with a newer player. So I'll admit up front, Elisa's been playing for a while. You said, you know, a year and a half ish at this point. But you know, on the flip side of that, it's also kind of hard to have a good enough rapport with a brand new player to get them on a podcast. So hopefully, we've hit a happy medium here.
Yeah, I think because of how few opportunities we get to like play with other people, I feel fairly new. So if that counts for anything.
But she isn't good enough yet to know how not to die. That's what we have to teach her.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not good enough yet to like have a streak of games where like, you know, the number that I win outnumbers the ones that I've lost.
Well, you have come to the right place. Will, did you see what? A little bit off track. Did you see what I won? Was King of Swiss with that deck?
Wasn't it some kind of crazy alliance deck?
Yeah, I won with alliance. Yeah. I had alliance got the better of me.
Oh no!
In the cut, but if you come with alliance, you know how not to die,
or at least to die really slowly. It sounds because. You did say it didn't pan out.
Yeah, I dug really hard for answers, but 76 cards, oof. It's rough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can't play just 75. You always have to play one more.
The banter, ooh, that hurts even more when your deck's already that big.
I mean, it's necessary.
So. I mean, I guess I should take your word. I haven't been King of Swiss with an alliance deck, so you got me there.
I don't think anyone else in the world has.
Oh, listeners, you're going to have to investigate that. Do a little fact checking for us.
I'm kidding. Probably someone else has, but
I just liked having trouble shuffling my deck because it was too big.
Okay, if you enjoy that, I guess that's to you.
You know, we all got our things, I guess.
Oh, boy. Well, pivoting away from that before...
Sorry, I got us off topic.
Before that gets too dark. Let's take a quick jump over to some of the news. We did have a couple things dropped on us this week, and I think they are extremely pertinent to the topic of getting new players into the game here and kind of helping expand the meta. The time is ripe for that in a number of ways. And one of those are the new starter decks that are coming out. We had half of the decks have a deck list dropped on us. I assume that the other four will probably come, I don't know, next week would be my guess. I don't think we need to deeply analyze all of these lists, but kind of general impressions from taking a look at these articles, or, well, one article, this article and these lists, what do you think?
They're okay for the lists. I mean, this is for new players, so they're not going to be winning a tournament anytime soon, but this is better than a deck you could just build out of the core for anyone else.
By a long shot, better than a one-core-only deck. It's actually legal, for one.
Well, yes. But you know what I mean. So, good for that. Good for it not just being complete garbage.
Yeah. I think they mostly look good for like their intended purpose, right? Like, they're not going to be tournament winners, of course. But
hey, man,
oh,
I'm gonna
man, you pull that off,
dance next year and win.
I don't know what I'll do. I will owe you many beers, I'm sure. Oh, even
off, so
better. I'll owe you nothing, I guess. but I'm looking at these, and there are some things that still feel weird to me, even with the stated goal. Like the Lannister deck not having even. I mean, I can understand not having 3x treachery in there, and that would probably be kind of a feel bad to people just starting out, but like one copy of it, it's such an iconic card and, you know, it aspect of the metagame, but also like the flavor is so huge. Like when people, in my mind, when they think Lannisters, they think the act of being treacherous, right? If not necessarily that card until they're exposed to it, and then they go, oh. Right? Like, I don't know. That feels weird to me. Plus, a couple of the singletons in other decks also feel weird. Like, that House Maester in the Barret deck? I don't know. Like, surely that could have been something else. A third Vanguard Lancer or something? I don't know. A third Flea Bottom Bastard? There's bound to be other low power level options that fit and showed off the theme, right?
I mean, well, Barret is the best house.
Is that in their bots? Did I miss that? No, it's not.
I don't even know. But if you expand after this, they are the best house for here.
Because they can get Crescent?
Crescent and
Pylos. Yeah. I guess Pylos does exist. I tend to forget about him.
But yes, Crescent is the best Maester. Except maybe Pycelle. But he's one of the best Maesters.
He really is.
So I think it's kind of cool that, like, in the Stark deck, that they focused on Direwolves. Even though, like, I mean, I know Sam Bratz kind of revived Direwolves for people and kind of and showed that, like, hey, surprise, they can do pretty well.
That's just Sam Bratz can
so
do
true.
Pretty well with anything.
Yeah, but still, like, I don't know. I think it's interesting that, that they have this deck focusing on direwolves when I feel oftentimes direwolves kind of take a back seat. But it's still a really cool theme. I know, right? They're so cute.
I think it's an attractive thing for new players to like direwolves, but yeah. They're not uber competitive.
I mean, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, I want these decks personally to like be oozing flavor. Like that's one of the things that hooks so many people with the game. And I guess that's maybe partly why I'm down on Treachery not being there, but I think that the direwolf thing is pretty awesome. I think that's perfect for what these decks want to do. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I hope it didn't come across that I'm like, ugh, I shouldn't have done that. But, yeah, I know. Like, I know in our household, like, Sam is super into the direwolves. And for a while, like, we'd have evenings where I was just like, Sam, are you having an existential crisis? Because he was like, how do I make these things work? Like, how do I keep them here? And I was like, Sam, I don't know, bud. But yeah, so I'm kind of excited about that. That at least, like, you know, later on you might have to break the news to new players that, like, actually you might have to kind of fill that deck with other things. But direwolves are really cool.
Did yeah, they give two them, brands.
Give me a second. I have to look at this. Did they give them brand at least?
It's the Corsair.
The loyal brand, right? No, they gave them core brand. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Why would you give them core brand if you're going to give them a direwolf deck? That's sad.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because like I feel that goes back to what point. Will was saying with flavor. Yeah.
New players, there is a better brand for the direwolves who loves puppies even more than you do.
There we go. Well, I gotta say, I at least I am super excited for these to be out. I think it's going to be very, very good for the game for these to be out there in front of people. So I hope they pay off. Well, their announcement did also come with a whole other article. This one's from Organized Play. So I'm honestly really excited about this new intro deck thing here, this whole OP event. I mean, to start with, they're giving everybody these honestly really sweet looking new faction cards that are like full bleed art with an iconic character from that house. There's a House Targaryen one here with Khal Drogo from the core set that looks gorgeous. And then the flip side on them are going to have these, they're calling them trials. They're basically achievements to kind of check off as you go through a game. Stuff like for the Targ one, reduce a character's strength to zero. Or do things like teach a new player to play or purchase an intro deck. Things like that. And it looks like they're slightly different for different houses because the Stark one's here too. But then if you actually complete those, or three out of the six, then you get to go ahead and pick up some of these extended art weenie characters, I guess, they've picked out for all the houses. They're kind of hit and miss on how playable those characters are. The Braided Warriors, the Direwolf Pup, the Sport Guard, those probably aren't really seeing much play. That Knight of the Reach is playable adjacent, maybe? I mean, he's not making most Tyrell decks, but probably in Melee at least. Fiery Followers is pretty sweet. The Messenger Raven's real sweet. The Lordsport Shipwright is certainly playable. And then, of course, the Shadow City Bastard, which I'm sure Scott's pretty pumped about. Like, in general, I think this looks like a great event with a lot of incentive for old and new players. And I think shows a few good things. I mean, one, it shows that FFG's invested in the future of the game and thinks that it is or could be expanding. I think it shows OP stepping up with a special event like this. And not only that, but I think it shows other departments stepping up as well. Like, because this obviously took a lot more coordination from the between the OP department and production and design departments than we normally see for a lot of FFG stuff. So I think across the board, this is a pretty great sign for the game. But I'm just super excited about that. So I probably rambled for way too long. Feel free for other people to actually give some thoughts. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Summarized everything, Will. You're just so great with your words that I can't fathom anything better to say.
I don't detect any sarcasm in that at all, Scott. Thank you. Your acting skills are really improving.
No, I totally agree with you, Will. I think this is really exciting. Scott and I were talking about this earlier, that sometimes I worry about the game due to the fact that some of the card game stores, or like just game stores around us, either don't carry the cards or are like five chapter packs behind because they weren't able to build up a meta. But with this, it kind of gives me hope that FFG isn't giving up yet on Game of Thrones and that they still want to support the community. So my husband has already gone ahead and contacted the game store in town to see if they wouldn't mind hosting a day where we can pass out the packs and get people playing.
Awesome.
So, yeah, we're really excited about it.
Well, cool.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, I'm a New Yorker, so it's harder to relate to the small town kind of card store thing. So, I mean, but if so, it's hard to say, like, is this necessary to my world? Maybe not, but to the world of, you know, the small town card store in the Midwest, maybe this is gigantic, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Going by the fact that, like, wherever you're at, like, yeah, you might be surrounded by this hundreds of thousands of people, whereas here, like, the greater area where I'm at is like 20,000 people. So, like, for us, yeah, this is massive.
Cool, cool. So, William, are you present?
Yes. Yes, I am. I just wanted to, you know, make certain that you guys actually got to say something after I just motored on there.
Cool. I just wanted to make sure you were present.
Yeah, no problem at all on that front. Well, okay. I mean, I suppose that kind of covers, in the broad strokes, the FFG news that we had this time around. So let's kick things over to the main topic that we were looking at doing this week. And that is a discussion with a new player, in this case, Lisa, who, you know, we wanted to kind of let field some questions to some folks that have been maybe a little more established, shall we say, and kind of see what sort of feedback, tips, advice, insight, and that sort of thing that we can provide. I know Kyle had been originally talking to Elisa with this idea and had mentioned that you had drawn up some questions already. I don't know if you have those formally written down and want to just work your way through the list, or if you want to do it off the top of your head, but I'm open to either.
Sounds good. Yeah, no, I was really excited for this. So I have an entire list already written up.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
How long is the list?
Oh, it's not super long at all. And it's divided by
250 questions.
Yeah. I mean, we might be able to do it, but it's going to be one sentence answers, and Scott and I will just trade off questions.
No, it's totally fine. I have it divided into like three sections, so like deck building, play, houses, and then plot decks, and I have like just a couple from each section that I feel I would most like to have answered. But yeah, so I think I'll just start with what I have at the top, which is for deck building. And this was kind of like at the forefront of my mind because lately Sam and I, we've just been having fun like making what we know are like terrible decks. But what we do is like we just go through our binders and just say like, you know, I really like this card in this house. And so, you know, I think I'm going to build a deck just out of Lannister cards that I really like and then see where we go from there. But if, you know, we were seriously to be building decks for tournaments or anywhere where we'd like to be competitive, I think like the first question that I'd want to ask is how do you go about choosing a win condition for a deck and then making that win condition consistent?
Ooh, Scott, you want to throw the snappy answer out there or do I get to do that one?
The snappy? I mean,
you pick 15 power, right? Because milling them out is still not really a viable win condition, right?
It might be, and we just haven't found the deck for it yet.
Don't talk to Bamford about that. He'll tell you he found it, and now it's been destroyed.
Isle of Ravens, man. But, So my philosophy on this is different than many people's philosophies. Like I was just talking about that, I played Alliance over the weekend, and the main reason why I was playing Alliance is because I refuse to play decks that I don't like, and I don't like the top two decks right now that I think are clear the top two decks, so I won't play them. So I would say you know your play style and you know what you enjoy and do that. But so I will play attrition decks, and I'll keep playing attrition decks or control decks. But the other way is when you're building a deck, you have to have an express goal at the end of the day. And what is the deck trying to do?
Yeah.
That is more what you're doing. So you could start from a card or a handful of cards together. More likely, like the Alliance deck started that. You know, House Florent Knight and Ramsey do very similar things, and you want them both, but no other house has enough draw to do besides Martell, so Martell's to be main, and that kind of thing. But that's the express goal, the win condition is to do things like Ramsey and House Florent Knight at the start, and Martell is also the same type of thing. So, you know, think about a couple cards together and how they synergize and then build the deck from there.
Gotcha.
Go ahead. Cards on raw power level shouldn't be just put in because of raw power level. And I think that's the biggest mistake. People not even new, but average deck builders make. They go for the best raw power level.
Yeah. I've loosely a long time ago set myself like a 90-10 rule where 90% of my deck I want to be geared toward doing whatever it is I've picked out to do, whether that, I mean, you know, if we're talking broad strokes here, if that's, you know, Neil control or power rush or whatever, and only devoting that 10% to the Justin Case cards, the hands judgments and confiscations, that sort of thing. And while that is a really broad stroke in comparison to your question, I think it's helped me at least stay away from some of that just generic good stuff kind of that Scott's talking about. I mean, yes, there are good stuff decks that do well, but only including it because it's a good, strong card doesn't necessarily do anything or gel or jive. Like, I wind up asking myself, does this fit with the 90% that I'm going for? Like, not just good on its own, but is there some portion of it that fits in that aspect of the deck?
Yeah, rather than like building a deck around one card, you're trying to figure out ways that like everything complements one another, so that like, let's say you didn't get that one card, you would still be able to do well.
Yeah, everything should have the same express goal. And if it doesn't, then most likely it isn't going to win. But, I mean, there's also new players might not have all the cards, so sometimes good stuff might just be the better choice for you just because you don't have the card pool in order to make the appropriate deck.
Well, I mean, and sometimes it's a many-faceted thing, right? Like, it's not always the primary purpose that a card's text has that is that 90% effect to me. So, like, to take an example of, say, I don't know, like a Bera Neil deck of some kind, right? So, I'm almost certainly going to include Dragonstone Informer in that deck, even though nowhere in his text does he mention kneeling an opponent's character. But two aspects of what, well, actually at least three aspects of what he does do help the rest of that, right? He's income, which is going to help me afford my Melisandres, my Stannises, my geez, what's the name of the new Shadows character? Okay, so okay, not using Shadows costs, but you get the idea that income helps me keep playing the Neil effects. It's also cheap and easy claim soak, so that I am more likely to be able to keep things like Melisandre on the board in the face of opposing military challenges. Plus, it's cheap and good on setup, and that cheap factor means I'm able to place more cards in setup and thus see more cards in the game, which means I'm more likely to draw the Neil cards. So all of the kind of secondary and tertiary effects of including that all still factor into that same initial goal, even though, you know, it's rules text doesn't say it anywhere.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. It's kind of like, a lot of times what I do is I think back to when I was playing Magic, and like basically the rules with how much mana should you have in your deck in order to support, you know, whatever else you're putting in there, so that you can actually play those cards. So, yeah, no, I think that
totally, and that's very important in Magic.
Yeah. So, no, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, it kind of got the wheels going for me already. So maybe tonight I'll surprise Sam and build a little less sucky deck. So, yeah, I think the other questions that I had written out for the deck building section, you guys basically answered them. So if you don't mind, if I move on to my play questions.
Sure.
Okay. So, Sam and I recently, like, we've been talking a lot about which challenges we have realized, like, we should prioritize when playing. And I understand that challenges are oftentimes situational, but for me, being a newer player, sometimes it's just easier to have a rule where it's like, all right, if you're unsure, just prioritize this challenge. And so the challenge we've decided is like safest to prioritize is the intrigue challenge. Because of the fact that some decks aren't the greatest with draw, and so whatever cards they have in hand they want to protect, or they're, you know, waiting to get off their Dracarys, or they're waiting to you know, play their call or their Danny the next turn. So yeah, we've decided that that's a safe one to prioritize. But like, how do you guys feel about prioritizing challenges?
You want this one first, Scott, or me?
You can go first. I don't want to take everything first, Will.
Hey, I'm trying to be nice and offer here. Well, you know,
You can go always first.
Well, I think the challenges question is a great one. And honestly, almost kind of a deceptive one. Like, I think there is a short, simple, straightforward answer to it that I would probably give. But I think there are also many more layers that can change that equation. The super short, simple one I give is that I totally agree with you that it should be intrigue. There's so many decks that want to hold on to something in their hand that you can maybe disrupt. But also, more often than not, it seems to be the challenge that you can commit least strength and characters on the board to and still win. And get the most unopposed out of a lot of times to eke out a little extra power. So I think it's a great default challenge. The deeper layers to that, in a nutshell, I don't know that we have time to really examine this across the board, but in a nutshell, I think it changes so much based on your deck and your opponent's deck and having the knowledge of what their general game plan is. You know, like you said, with like a Targ deck that wants to hold on to Dracarys or something, like if I'm playing against them, then yes, I definitely prioritize that intrigue challenge to either force them to play that Dracarys on the character I'm initiating intrigue with, or lose it. And then, you know, either way, it's gone. And I'm in a much better position. But on the flip side, that may not be true against a Tyrell Lords of the Crossing deck. It doesn't really care that much about any particular single card in its hand. Same thing on my side. If I'm attacking, or, you know, if I'm figuring out what challenges I'm doing based on my deck, this changes a lot if I'm playing, say, some heavy Martell control deck with a bunch of resets, right? In that case, military is going to be very low on the priority list because I know I'm swiping out their characters with a plot in the moment. And intrigue is going to be very high because it destroys their ability to refill the board after my reset plots. But on the flip side, if I'm playing that Tyrell Crossing deck we talked about a moment ago, well, also, I don't necessarily care all that much about the intrigue challenges because my game plan isn't to draw the game out and make that card advantage count somehow. I need to, you know, A, really manage power totals because I need to get to 15. So that's going to be a huge priority. And B, military is going to be a large priority. Because it pairs down what's literally already on the board, right? Like, it's getting rid of spent resources and removing opponents' characters so that I have better capability to get the rest of my challenges through to get to that 15 power. So, I mean, there's tons of other deck examples. So if I keep going, I will go way too far down that rabbit hole. But those are my broad thoughts on it.
Okay, yeah, no, that's great. I think, you know, until I get to the point where, you know, I'm sitting down with a deck in front of me, yeah, at least in a general sense, I'll be thinking, okay, it's okay to lead with an intrigue challenge if I'm unsure what to do. So, yeah, no, that's cool. I appreciate the insights. So, kind of sticking, in this general like area, I don't know if you think that this question like will lead to, I don't know, an hour of of answers, or if like you could come up with a quick answer, I'm not sure. But how do you decide which challenge you want to lead with? Is it just, like you said before, it's deck dependent and also kind of situational?
I mean, basically, yes, to be honest. I don't know a better way to say it. I think it's learning by playing. What I will say is a lot of new players really overstate the military challenge, and it's by far the least important challenge.
That's really good to know.
Because resets are very important for this game and a big part of the game, and a lot of what military challenge does will be done by resets anyway soon enough. And that's also, a lot of newer players will make the mistake of going very wide, and you shouldn't go very wide because resets are a thing and you will get reset.
Yeah, definitely. I know personally that like that's a trap I fall into all the time, where I'm just like, oh yeah, military challenge, and then my husband will stop me and he's like, hey, wait, think about this for a second. Is that really what you want to do? And I'm like, yeah, I want to kill people. And he's like, no. Like, there are other challenges that are far more valuable. So yeah, no, that's good to know. So the last question I have in my play section is, based on what's in your play area and in your opponents, how do you determine what you should and should not marshal?
That is sober dependent.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a deep one. I mean, I can give you what, or, well, here, let me put it this way. I can give you where I'm looking, but yeah, what I'm looking for is so dependent on what is on the board, what's in my deck, and what's in my opponent's deck. So, I mean, where I'm looking are almost certainly going to be the next challenge phase and the next plot phase. I mean, sure, great players are probably thinking, you know, turns past that even for their marshalling, but that's, we'll start small. You know, I definitely am focused on what challenges I feel are going to be super important that coming challenge phase, whether that's attack or defense or which challenges. That varies a lot, but that's at least the place I'm looking. And then, like Scott's saying on the previous question about overextending and, you know, going too wide, I'm also thinking about likely plots after that. And, you know, maybe it's great for me to drop four characters and own this challenge phase, but if that's going to set me up, you know, six characters to my opponent's likely finish of one, well, I'm probably just marching myself into one reset or another. So I've got to think ahead to both of those.
Gotcha. Okay. No, I appreciate knowing those things too, that it's, because I've heard a lot of experienced players talk about not only thinking about the current plot phase, but also the upcoming ones, and then also thinking about what's in your opponent's plot deck. For instance, like I've played Niccolo Marussi on Iron Throne, and he's chosen a plot, and he'll ask me like, okay, so what plot do you think I'm going to pick? Or like, based on the board state right now, what plot do you think I'm going to pick? And you know, based on the number of cards that are in my hand, what do you think I'm going to do? So yeah, it's a good to have that reminder that it's not just what's on the board, but what could possibly be there in the future.
Scott, do you have any more specific, less nebulous feedbacks than my very vague answers?
I don't want to get into, you know, things I hate about the game, but I will now. To a small extent. Because this just brought up why plot cancel is so bad for the game. So, for new players, there is a card now that lets you plot cancel. So the game, when you think about the future, is based upon, like I was just talking about, how resets are a thing. And the game is built around resets being a big part of the game. Willie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe before even Valor was out in second edition, Nate said that he thought Valor wasn't necessary and extremely important part of Thrones and was part of what kept it balanced.
I am pretty sure he mentioned that somewhere at one point where, you know, basically because so many folks were asking about it, and he was basically like, yeah, you know, it is coming. We are planning for that.
Yeah, so the game is balanced around resets. And when you take away resets, you're fundamentally challenging the base of the game and how players play, because you're thinking about what's coming up next. That's all I'm going to say on this for now. We can talk about this another time. But plot cancel's bad for the game. Anyway.
Marshalling.
I'm trying to think about... You kind of have to think about what's coming up. If that's the question, but how do you decide marshal? I mean, do you need claim soak? If you need claim soak, then marshal a Chud. That's one thing, I suppose. But when you're thinking about what's coming up, for instance, there are key plots, right? So March to the Wall is a key plot that a lot of decks rely upon and take into account. So if you're going to have one big character out, the reason why you can't just set up one big character is because March does the thing. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking that they could win one military challenge and you could have, when you have one Chud out now, the next turn they can march your big guy. So you probably want to have two Chuds out or don't marshal that big guy right now. Because big guy could get marched. So that is, I guess, a very small, simple answer to that. It's a super dependent type of thing, though.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if all of my questions are going to be, well, it depends. So, but yeah.
I am afraid we might hedge a lot of those answers.
Yeah, no, and that's totally fine, because I think that that, to me, is one of the draws of the game, is that there aren't any simple answers. It's very much... you need to be aware of many different things in order to take advantage of the board state or in order to do well. So I'd rather play a game that you can, but
I mean, totally all about juggling as many balls in the air as you can for as long as you can.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a good thing to bring to new players, or like, with these new FFG decks that are supposed to introduce people to the game. I think for a lot of people, that'll be a real draw, is saying that, like, this isn't some straightforward, easy peasy game. Like, it takes a lot of brain power to get through one game, which is like why I hear a lot of people say that they play Rush. Because they're like, you know, I'm going to be playing however many games today at this tournament. Like, I don't want my brain to be fried.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think it's good. So I think this is a question that will require less hedging. But curious, like, what are your common strategies that you use when playing against, like, certain houses? So maybe this will be easier with an example, but, like, what do you look out for in those houses, and what do you like mentally prepare yourself for? So for instance, like with Targ, like I know that Targ is one of the houses that's scaring a lot of people right now. What do you mentally prepare yourself for when playing against Targ?
I mean, I try not to be attached to any of my characters. which, you know, honestly is probably kind of a good general rule of thumb for anything. But I definitely feel like I make poor decisions if I get too attached to my, you know, Tyrion or whatever, for an example, that's easily hit by Dracarys. And sometimes, you know, living in fear of that Dracarys and trying so hard to play around that to not lose Tyrion just cascades into a long string of suboptimal plays. Most of the time, I think it is better to call their bluff, so to speak, to force it and not be attached to any singular character. You have to, you know, adapt to their loss and keep coming at them. So that's my quick and easy thought for Targ.
I mean, for Targ is honestly, not that we're going into big meta talk, but Targ is actually like something people think they have mostly figured out. I'd say like Mace is a card that people think is a problem, and one of the reasons people think it's a problem is because you doesn't have to interact with you a lot, right? Like you can, Mace can just do what he does and gain power. And you kind of have to think about what is your opponent's deck trying to do. So, like Greyjoy, you know, unopposes a thing, and We Do Not Sow is a super high impact card that many would argue is above the curve. So you really want to stop getting those unopposed, but against most other houses, you should let some unopposed go through. It's not a big deal, and it'll let you get to your game plan faster.
Keep going, Scott. I just had a thought that I'll throw in when you're done.
No, go for it.
Well, I was just going to say your comment there about Mace made me think, you know, if I was broadly talking for all of the houses, I would say that there's two categories of stuff that I worry about. Category one are what are their most proactive cards that can most screw me, and a lot of those, you know, are going to be challenge phase actions, say Dracarys at that end of the scale, right? And at the far opposite end of the scale, what are the cards that go hard in the positive scale for them, maybe even without interacting with me at all, like Mace? It's all the stuff in the middle that I can just kind of deal with in normal gameplay and work around and not worry about that much. But it's the stuff at the too far end of that spectrum that are the cards I really have to watch out for and plan around.
Yes. So the cards like Mace, cards like Scheming Septim that are just very positive for them, but don't even really have to interact with you, are generally the more challenging ones to play around. Things like Targ and Drac, I mean, keep in mind if Chapter Pack Dany, Queen Dany is around, then the rule doesn't apply, but anything four or less strength is Dracable, but they have to have a Standing Dragon or Standing Dany. So try to kneel out their dragons before that. Anything three or less is Consuming Flamesable. So don't dupe those, because it's not worth duping if you think it's going to get eaten up by flames. And also you might want to try to bait out them burning something that you don't care as much about, so later you can play something you care more about.
Makes sense. So with cards like Mace, where they can just jump things in and out and gain all the strength that they want, how do you handle things like that?
Milk. We can get into things that I don't think are good for the game, and Mace is one of them. I can keep going, but that's why it's so difficult, right? I mean, and also when I say the game is built around resets, that should be the case, so that'd be the way to handle things like Mace, right? But things like dupes exist, and that could change the complexion of the game too, right? Like a dupe on Mace is the biggest problem in the world. That's what I lost the dance to. It's just dupe on Mace, and I didn't have Varus or a way to get or an arrow to get through the save. That's just pure variance. So if you see Mace, which and you can reset him, generally it's a good idea to reset him. Get him off the board if they're going out of control. Things like
gotcha.
That he can get out of the control fast. I mean, another thing Tyrell has now that's super hard to deal with is the Scheming Septon. Because it can get in off the board easily, and then it's basically making them 2 gold a turn with Hightower. It's making them 2 gold and a draw and a power a turn, and they're not interacting with you at all to do so. And that's rough.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think people are trying to figure out an answer for, and the answer isn't there, but most games, I think, honestly, not even just Game of Thrones, we're talking card games, board games in general, all come down to resource management, right? If you can control your opponent's resources, then you will win the game, because you're basically playing a resource game. So if you control draw, right? Intrigue challenge, you're controlling the amount of cards they have, that's a resource. Winter type of decks, choky decks, aren't popular right now, but money's a resource, right? Characters on the board are a resource. So if you think of everything as a resource, how do you make all the resource cost-benefit analysis work in your favor? And that's what you should always be asking yourself. And if you can, then generally you will win. If you can't, generally you will lose. And
man, can you tell Scott used to play Netrunner? It's all a resource game. I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, no, every game.
That's an interesting way to think of it, though.
I mean, could you tell he used to be a Euro gamer, I think is more what it is.
There we go.
Yeah.
But I mean, everything is a resource game. That's why I'm really good at attrition, by the way, Will, because I think of everything as a resource game, and an attrition deck is basically trying to out-resource your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way, this is the way at least I view games in general. So if you're not viewing things as resources and your opponent isn't as well, then you shouldn't be doing it. You're most likely not succeeding. So think about March to the Wall. That's the best resource trading plot you could think of, right? It's a strict one-for-one swap. But it can be deadly, right? Because if you can make it at a point where their resource of that one-for-one swap is so much more important to them than the resource you're giving up, even though it's a straight one-for-one character swap, it'll change the complexion of the game completely. And to me, that is what you're always looking for.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah,
these
go
are really good things
to that.
About.
I don't know if I went too deep on the deep, I don't know, on the resource train.
No. No. It's great. Because I was just thinking about the two things combined, what Will said earlier about not becoming too attached to specific. So in your words, it would be a resource, but yeah, not becoming too attached to different characters or different things that you have on the board. But at the same time, yeah, being aware of what resources you have and what the other person has. But yeah, no, what you said earlier, Will, about the resource or about like not becoming attached to characters really hits home for me, because I know that my husband and I will play and I'll lose somebody that I was like, ah, that person was integral to me sticking around until the next plot. And then I'll go on tilt and I'll be like, nope, I just lost. But the only reason I lose is because I feel, well, also he's a better player, but, but I feel like I lose because of the fact that like, I just basically self-fulfilling prophecy. I lost that character. So I told myself I was going to lose, but, yeah, I like that way of thinking of it, of just thinking of them as resources. So how do you control theirs and how do you control your own? But
yeah, I think that's probably
a little. Yeah. Well, are you guys ready for like my last question?
Yeah, I was going to say, thanks to technical difficulties and the like, we are probably down to just one last question. So what do you have?
All right. So plot decks. I was just curious if you guys ever build a plot deck first and then build the rest of your deck around it.
I don't. I think it's a bad idea, but I know Tommy thinks it's a good idea. I don't know why he does, but it's a bad idea. Don't do that.
I think it was probably probably influenced by some of the top players when he started playing. You know, folks like John Bruno and Greg Atkinson and stuff that put so much focus on plots. Now, I don't remember Greg building the whole plot deck first very often, but you know, frequently he would pull like three or so and say, okay, this is the game plan, then build the deck, then fill out, you know, his other seven plots kind of based on what else he needed. And I know Bruno has pushed plots so hard and talked about building the whole plot deck first before, but it's honestly really hard for me to wrap my mind around that too. The plot deck to me is so much of a kind of sideboard tool, and I don't even necessarily just mean that, you know, from the aspect of pulling out a silver bullet to answer my opponent's stuff, but also to answer my own deck, right? Like if I've built it with high cost characters, then, you know, the three, you know, summer econ plots in my plot deck are my my tools in that toolbox to deal with that in my own deck as well. So I always build the plot deck last.
I mean, the Greg school of thought to building with two or three, maybe four plots for the general game plan, I think it's fine. You can do that. I think you have to be a relatively advanced deck builder to do that, but I do build like that once in a while. Generally, it's built around some card combination, whatever else, and then you'll start seeing what the deck wants, right? And you'll start seeing its cost curve. Because, honestly, in second ed, when I understand it wasn't as much in first ed, usually most decks will want at least one money plot in there, and it's rare that they don't. But before building decks, I've been like, I want to build this deck, and it's going to have two marched, and it's going to have Valor and Valor. That's a very specific game plan, and you're building very much for that. And you could basically put those plots in, say, that's money, I'll put the other three plots in next after I build the deck. That you could definitely do. But I think, again, these are also decks that are more niche decks. They're not like good stuff type of decks, and they're not like, they're not like the average deck. They're more, they generally have decks with a very specific game plan, very controlly or attrition type of game plan, because there's much less plots that do those type of things. A lot of plots fill very similar areas. Like, before you build the deck, you probably don't know if you want to exchange information or counting coppers. You might know the deck will want one of them, but you won't know which one it wants, or if it'll want Time of Plenty or another very generic opener.
Gotcha, yeah.
Well,
and so I'm assuming that, like... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, keep going.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask if... I'm assuming this is what happens with a lot of people, that you build your deck, and then you build your plot deck, and then you play a couple games and realize, you know, I thought that plot was really good in here, but maybe not so much, and then switch it out, but keep playing and try to figure out if, like, that really is the right plot deck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, playing, you're fine-tuning every last card if you're doing it, like, legit for the most GME of GME reasonings for the deck. if you build a song deck like Will, then maybe you just like some song plots.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have any of those yet.
No, we don't, I think. Just song events and agendas. One of these days I'm going to get a song character, though, and it's going to be glorious.
I don't know how you can make a living incarnation of a song.
I'll come up with something. There's my champ card right there.
All right. Yeah, I can't wait for your champ card, man.
Well, I think that's been a good discussion. Those have been some really awesome questions. I'm sorry we haven't always been able to get super specific because so much, you know, can vary as we talked about. But I hope it's given some good stuff for you and listeners to chew on.
Yeah, definitely. No, thanks so much for letting me ask all these questions.
Yeah, no problem. Maybe we can do it again sometime.
Heck, sounds great.
Shall we props and slops? Now I know.
I'll slop your internet connection.
Hey, there we go. Scott had one ready this week. Well done. I knew he'd figure this out eventually.
I mean, yeah, anything I dislike, like things that are bad for the game, I'll slop those. And I dislike your internet connection very much.
There you go. I actually have two things. I have a prop and a slop at this point. I have a huge glowing prop to Tony Cruz, who had the most gloriously beautiful, you know, last minute, well, more like last 40 seconds of stoppage time, you know, curving goal off a free kick at the end of the Germany match on Saturday. I was getting really worried that they were going to put themselves in a spot to get eliminated in their second game. So that goal kept them alive. So thank goodness. But on the flip side, slops to the fact that Iceland just lost today and were not able to keep the dream alive. It's a bummer. So, see where it goes from here. We're dumping.
Elisa, it's your turn.
Yeah, we're dumping right out of the blue. If you don't regularly listen to us, you might be a little lost. Basically, we just talk about some stuff in our lives, pop culture, nerd culture, the game, whatever, that we want to either give thanks for, congratulate, you know, or otherwise have positive feelings about with a prop or negative feelings with a slop.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Sorry about the pause. I was trying not to interrupt people. So, yeah, I'm trying to think what would be a slop today would definitely be that it was pouring like none other on my way to work today. And I grew up in Seattle, and like you would think that when it comes to rain that I'd be like, oh yeah, that's nothing, don't even need an umbrella. But rain in the Midwest sometimes can be ridiculous. There was no shortage of hydroplaning this morning, unfortunately. So yeah, so that wasn't the greatest. But a prop would be you guys taking the time to answer questions and like share your wisdom with the Thrones community. So thank you very much for that.
Not sure how wise it is, but
it was something.
but no, it's very much appreciated.
Well, quite welcome. Quite welcome. Well, any other props or slops there from either of you guys? I've got one last prop, but I'll let you throw it out there if you've got
any. Slops to the community. Slops to the community for not having an alt-art version of Alliance that I could find. Actually had to play the regular Alliance art. Very upsetting. It is a very good art.
So close.
And now Will. Gotta get on making that.
Well, you know, maybe we can come up with something. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, what's Kira doing?
Ooh, that's a good question. We'll have to touch base with her. Some of the alt art stuff she's done for Kyle has been pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, she's great. We still have all the alt arts we got from Iowa Worlds.
Okay, well, call her, tell her we want a flag with every member of the White Book dressed up as with the shirt of a different house on them, and that's the Alliance
Ooh.
Art.
Ooh, I like the way you think. That'd be actually. Great. Well, if that doesn't put us in the danger zone, I don't know what does. It does.